free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net, see our past and upcoming lineup of speakers, download our past archives, and if you're listening live, there's a list of phone numbers you can call in live for any questions you might want to ask our guest, who today is Francesca Crowley. She's Vice President of Operations and Marketing at Industrial Nanotech Incorporated. They've come up with a product called Nansolate. It's a paint that could generate electricity from thermal differences as well as insulating at the same time. So you have a number of energy applications there. This is May 4th, 2008. Thanks for joining us, Francesca.
Oh, sure. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, tell us about this technology.
Okay, absolutely. Nansolate is a coating technology. Basically, we use a nanomaterial in the coating that has a very low thermal conductivity, so it doesn't transfer heat energy well, which in turn makes it act as an insulator. And the fact that it's in a coating, a clear coating at that, allows it to go on a wide variety of surfaces, everywhere from industrial equipment such as heat exchangers, pipelines, dye machines to homes and walls. We have a huge residential following who use it on their homes to insulate as well.
Okay, so that's the insulative. I understand that there's also something that's being developed where you would actually not only insulate against the thermal gradient, but you would actually generate electricity from the thermal gradient.
Right, exactly. That's the next big step for our technology and that our R&D department is working on right now. And that's true because once you help to inhibit that heat energy, it has to go somewhere. So what our R&D is doing is to try to find another way to use it, rather than let it just dissipate back out in the air, to actually take that heat energy that is being captured and be able to generate electricity from it for another use, channel it into another use.
So it'd be kind of like a solar cell that's harnessing the photons that are hitting it and turning it into electricity. Instead, you would be harnessing that thermal gradient, turning it into electricity from a substrate.
Right, that's exactly right. Correct.
Okay. Now, if I understand the way you're wording this, you've had the thermal insulated paint for quite some time, and this other, the thermoelectric, is something that's in the R&D. Maybe you can give us an idea how long you've had the paint available for the thermal, for the insulating, and then when you think you might have the thermoelectric technology commercially available.
Okay, sure. The Nansolate coatings that we currently have, they've been on the market for about 4 years now, since April of 2004, and they've basically been just gaining in recognition and market acceptance since they've been out there. And then the new technology, I mean, it's hard to say with research and development. The Nansolate coatings took about 2 years, which is fairly short time frame for product development. Before they came to market. So this new technology, I hate to tie down a specific time frame, but possibly 2 to 4 years.
And how long have they been working on that?
Now that, they've already been working on the newer technology for, well over a year now, probably a couple, 3 years, since not too long after the coatings came out. Our CEO, he's actually the mind behind our technology. He invented our Nansolate coating. So once a product's on the market, he's in R&D. He's looking for, the next way that we can use the technology, the next step to take it to.
Now, in your coatings, let's talk about that for a minute.
What
are you finding the typical or the most common customer, who is it that wants your product the most?
Here in the U.S., it's overwhelmingly the homeowners. We have a huge homeowner following, and we didn't anticipate when the product was first brought out. We thought of it as a pipeline, industrial type coating. We didn't envision the homeowners being interested, and then they just started using it. And so then shortly thereafter, we came out with our Home Protect labeling for them, Home Protect line. And they really like it because they're able to buy it and, you know, see an immediate reduction in their energy. Well, immediate, I see. It does have a 30-day cure time. But they see a fairly short return on the investment. And then internationally, we have a large industrial use, specifically in the textile market. We have some huge textile plants saving about $40,000 U.S. a month in energy costs just from coating all their equipment with our coatings.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about a short ROI for mm-hmm. the industrial or for the residential, what is the typical ROI for?
I'd say less than a year, probably between. I mean, everybody's application differs, of course, but generously, I'd say between 8 months to a year.
Mm-hmm. Are you finding any of the automobile industry looking at this for possible installation mm-hmm. on automobile?
Yeah, we have had interest, from quite a few automakers. Now there are currently three NASCAR teams that use the coatings, and a lot of the automakers will use their race car teams as kind of a test market. For you know, different innovations they might choose to put into their normal automotive lines. So we have had the process
more than mm-hmm. that'd be safety against any fires more than for comfort.
Correct. But basically ours is used to help increase the horsepower currently, and then yes, for safety as well, for controlling the heat from, you know, the engine compartments into the interior compartment.
How would that increase the horsepower?
It's used in places such as the intake manifold, the fuel tank. So basically, by controlling the transfer of heat, they're able to control the processes dealing with the gas and how those go through the lines and allows the car to run more efficiently.
If I understand right, oftentimes the race car industry is somewhat of a guinea pig for the industry in general for the automobile market. Is that true? Do you see that maybe other more mainstream applications will pick up on that?
Yeah, that is absolutely true. They tend to test things out on the race teams at first. So we have, and we have taken it the next step from, you know, the race teams that were using us to their kind of parent companies, I guess, or their main automotive companies, and then them taking a look at our technology. The U.S. ones are a little slower to change. We have had some interest from some foreign automakers as well, but they are very interested in how they might incorporate the technology into the automobiles, making them more efficient.
What about clothing, fabrics, and whatnot?
Currently, our coatings, they have to go on a rigid surface, the ones we have on the market right now, so they mm-hmm. they can't be put on cloths. However, one of the things our R&D is working on is making the nanomaterial we use more acceptable to other carrier systems. Currently, we have in the water-based latex for the coating, but they're working on changes they can make so perhaps it could be woven into textiles, and, you know, that would allow it to be used in a lot more applications, you know.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk for a second about how this works. Why mm-hmm. is it that this paint is providing insulative capacity over such a short distance? You usually mm-hmm. think of paint as being a very narrow thickness on your wall or whatever surface it's on, and yet you're using it for insulation. Why is it working that way?
Right, and it's the nano material we use that actually is the magic component, the one that makes it work. The water-based coating system basically is there to be able to attach that nanomaterial to surfaces, to kind of glue it on, you know, a wall surface or a pipe surface. The nanomaterial itself has very low thermal conductivity, so it helps inhibit the transfer of heat. And it's able to do it, you know, as you said, over a very short distance. So by being able to incorporate that technology into a system that allows it to be used on surfaces, it gave it the characteristic to be able to insulate large areas.
Is it basically like a micro bead? So it's like little hollow spheres?
It's not quite like that. If you looked under the microscope, it would look kind of like a lava rock. Basically, it has a network of nano-sized internal tunnels in the particle itself. Some people do confuse our technology with the ceramic microspheres technology, which are like small glass beads. Ours is a little bit different. Basically, the tunnels themselves, which are nano-sized, the particle itself is micro in size with nano-sized exterior architecture.
You talked earlier about a 30-day cure time. Is it basically creating like a, maybe we could use a metaphor analogy of like a coral thin or something like that?
Right.
Why is it taking so long to cure?
The
cure
time
in the curing process.
It is basically the process for the water-based latex coating itself that the particle resides in. Once the coating is cured, basically the particle makes up 70% of the film. And, of course, when it goes on wet, it's much less than that. So during the cure time, the extra moisture is dissipating out of the coating film. And while it's still in there, the water is working against the natural low thermal conductivity, and that's why it takes the cure time, the full cure time, before the total thermal benefits are reached.
So basically, the microstructure, so to speak, is done as soon as it's applied, and just takes time for all those little tiny cavities to evaporate out?
That's correct, right.
Okay. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, I just had a quick question. You said that you use it for residential uses. What was the most surprising use you might have heard of from somebody using it at their house or something like that?
Oh gosh, that's a good question, because people do use it on a lot of different places that we didn't even envision. One of the more surprising ones. It does have a corrosion resistance feature to it. Somebody's used it on the AC grates, say they're in bathrooms, the registers, I think is what they're called. Basically, he said they were rusting up to prevent the corrosion. He said on those, so that was a unique use. I have had people ask about using them on guitar strings as well.
Wow, really?
But some unique ones. I mean, the main ones, of course, in residential, people use it on their walls and attics. But
okay. Yeah. All right, well, thank you very much. I just wanted to ask that crazy question.
Yeah, thanks. That was a good one.
All right, bye.
Okay. What would you say are some of the applications that you see as a company that are maybe taking a while to kind of catch on in the market that you think are obvious ones that maybe people aren't recognizing?
The biggest, I guess the most long-term industry that we've been attempting to use the coating in, and it seemed like the most obvious one to us off the bat, was the pipeline, the oil and gas pipeline industry. Just because using our coating not only cuts the cost, but currently the pipelines have to use a different product to protect against corrosion, and then a different product to insulate, and then whenever they inspect them, they have to rip all that insulation off to inspect them for corrosion underneath. So it seemed like pretty much a slam dunk to us, but we're just finding that industry takes a long time to break into. So we're getting there. We've been in talks with Petrobras for over a year now. So we're getting into that industry slowly.
What is the R factor that you are advertising for this paint?
Now, our current Nance Light coatings, they don't have an attached R value, and that's because the measurement for the R value is based on an inch of thickness. So it wasn't created to measure anything less than an inch accurately. Ours isn't the only one that runs across that problem. The foil insulations have the same issue where they're not made to go on an inch thick either.
Mm-hmm. There's not another comparable the R factor industry, or the calibration, so to speak, requires at least an inch of material?
That's correct. The R calculation itself uses an inch of thickness. Now, there is a thermal conductivity. We have, which is another thermal measurement, and that one doesn't rely as much on thickness. So we have the thermal conductivity of the particle. And then we have different case studies that we do and customers send in, basically that help others see the different energy savings that certain uses have gotten depending on the application.
What about the plumbing industry? I would think that would mm-hmm. be a big application.
Oh, you're right. Now, that would be a very good one as well, plumbing and HVAC ducting, both of those. Yeah, it hasn't broken big time in the plumbing industry yet, although we have had homeowners themselves use it on their water pipes.
Mm-hmm. Are they finding that works really well?
Yeah, they're finding. Of course, with you and me, we notice it the most when we turn on the water. We don't have to wait as long for it to get either hot or cold. So that's the first place they notice it, not having to wait for the water to either heat up or cool.
What about energy savings besides convenience, the mm-hmm. amount of energy it takes to have to heat that water?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's the biggest thing for homeowners is there's only a limited amount of ways that you can either earn more money or reducing your costs, your monthly costs. So by reducing the money you pay each month for, to your electric company or to your gas company is one way that really helps them.
How aggressively are you going after, for example, plumbing companies or hot water heater companies, some of the most obvious applications?
Right. Now, those we've marketed to basically in a few industry and trade publications. Our last targeted marketing was to painting contractors, but plumbing contractors would be the next one up that we'd like to do, definitely, and hot water heater.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those make a lot of sense.
What about like city piping and whatnot to prevent,
mm-hmm.
we just had a major pipe in my neighborhood go out this last winter, right in the dead of the winter, and
they
had to rip the street up, and I imagine, I don't know what was the cause of the break, I don't know if it was from the
mm-hmm.
cold or what, but I would think that would be an industry that would want to see.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of cost are we talking about to apply this to a pipe, for example?
Oh, that's absolutely right. Yeah, our cost is very low. It's depending on which product you use, it's anywhere between 44 cents to 53 cents a square foot, which is a lot lower than, certain other types of high-end insulations. And then even less if you're looking for corrosion resistance. So yeah, exactly. Using a coating like ours on, the pipes and piping that within the city infrastructure, not only, helps in reducing costs, but it increases the longevity of the pipes and it allows for much, easier inspection since the coating's clear. You don't have to take off an insulation in order to see whether a pipe has an issue with corrosion.
So when you were talking earlier, you had made the point about the coating being clear. That's coming up. That makes sense of why
mm-hmm.
That would be a good application in the pipeline industry, because you put the coat on and you mm-hmm. can see the status of the what's underneath the substrate without having to rip anything up.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's they're under regulatory guidelines where they have to inspect every certain number of years. So basically they're having to throw away and re-insulate, you know, every time they do an inspection. You're correct, and those costs, not only in labor but in material, could be reduced greatly.
What is the number that you typically give out in terms of the thermal insulating mm-hmm. capacity? You know, system A is without your nanosolate, system B is with, and the difference is what?
Oh, sure. And we've done a lot of different field tests, not just us, but other distributors of ours in other countries. And the typical one is it's 20% difference in testing that we've done and that others have done also. Just as you say, where you're testing one, say, an uninsulated box or small model against an insulated one, one insulated with our coating. And then the difference is that homeowners will typically report back to us are between 20 to 40%. It just depends on, you know, the application that they're doing and how much they spend on their energy.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine it would also depend on what kind of temperature gradient they're typically seeing.
That's right, because one of the things, that since the coating inhibits heat transfer, the more differential between your temperatures, say, you know, in the hot summer or in the coldest winter, the more it's going to be working for you, the more heat is trying to transfer, therefore the more it's blocking than, say, on a, you know, on a spring day where maybe your interior and temperature are pretty close.
Well, it sounds like this is a product that makes a lot of sense. I'm curious what your company growth has looked like since you've introduced the product.
Oh, it's well, it's really grown a lot since we first brought it out. As far as, you know, our sales have continued to increase. I think we had a press release about probably about six weeks to 2 months ago about our increase in sales from the previous year. And then our increase from customers on a daily basis has too. And as far as also larger publications picking us up, we appeared in Women's Day this past February, which, you know, is one of the bigger home type magazines that we've been in.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of those numbers for the increase?
Oh, let me take a look. I think... let me pull up that press release real quick because I don't want to quote the wrong thing. I think it was, gosh, I think it was around 255%, but let me look to make sure.
Uh-huh. And also I'd be curious to know how you're growing internationally.
Oh, internationally, right now we cover about 37 countries. So we've been doing very well, bringing on new distributors. We're in a... I mean, just everywhere, Ireland, UK, China, Australia, Africa, Europe, South America. So it's really been going strong. And some of our big, we have just as many sales internationally right now as we do in the U.S.
And you're using a direct sale approach?
That's right. You're right. We sell, well, here in the U.S., of course, we have our website. We sell off the website, and then we have independent sales reps as well. And then we sell directly to our distributors also. And I did find that year-over-year revenue growth number. Quarter one, 2008, was 255% over quarter one, 2007. So, you know, we've had very good growth since we began.
Yeah, that's... with a quadrupling or more, almost quintupling.
Right.
Yeah.
And then recently, well, in that, it kind of all goes hand in hand with more people learning about our product and telling other people. You know, we were also recently mentioned on the Lowe's Contractor website and one of their blogs. So it all helps, you know, in getting the word out about the product, basically, so it can help, you know, it can help more people.
When you mentioned Lowe's, I'm just curious how many of the large distribution networks like Lowe's or Walmart mm-hmm. that you've been able to penetrate.
In the U.S., we haven't penetrated any of the Lowe's or Home Depot's yet. Although we have sold in we have had cases where a customer will go in and ask for our product, and so that particular store will order from us so they can, you know, because they would rather sell the product to their customer than tell them to, you know, go to our website and buy it. So that helps in getting the store to, I guess, take a look at our technology. Now, internationally, we have been able to get in one of the big boxes called Placemakers. It's kind of like the Home Depot of New Zealand. And so they carry the product right now.
All right. And in terms of the, I'm curious, in the, we've talked about home applications, but in the automobile mm-hmm. applications, where are you finding that people are using this the most?
People will use it usually on the firewall in between the engine compartment and the vehicle, and then they'll also use it on their fuel tanks to help boost, basically to help control the heat transfer, keep the heat. To control the heat and make the gas go through the engine more efficiently.
Do you know of anyone who's actually used it on the external paint surface as a way of making the internal compartment more comfortable?
No, I do know people who used it on basically like the cage of the car, not as the final exterior coating, but they'll use it, say, under an automotive coating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, to keep the interior compartment more comfortable. And it, for instance, in summer months, it reduces the load on, the AC unit.
Where the heat inside of a vehicle is often a result of the sun striking the surface, dark paint will collect the heat and
mm-hmm.
transfer that inside. Would this prevent that transfer?
Yes, that would be one of the places it would be effective, especially if it was in a manufacturing capacity, if it was added, say, on the roof before they put in the headliner, that's actually one of the uses we had in our presentation to an automotive company.
If you were pitching to an automobile manufacturer, what would be the typical price per vehicle to put a coating? And where would you put that coating on each car coming up the assembly line?
Gosh, I'd say the typical per vehicle, it would probably be about $60 or less. I'm going at the per gallon price. I would say the main place they'd want to put it in the manufacturing assembly is the cage of the vehicle. And as far as the engine goes, the intake manifold, the fuel tank, and the fuel lines would be the most effective.
Mm-hmm.
And for square footage, let me cut that in half and say probably about $30 per car. So I'm trying to imagine how much of a gallon would go on a car. It probably wouldn't take a full one.
Uh-huh. What is the general price per gallon of the corrosive resistant and insulating
mm-hmm.
paint?
Our Home Protect coating, the one, the clear coat, the one that homeowners would use, it's $65.95 a gallon. And then the highest one we sell is our High Heat, which is used a lot in the industrial applications. Basically, applications up to 400, it's $79.95 a gallon.
Now, when a home owner is using it, we're talking about they're just painting the internal or external walls with this?
That's correct. Generally, they will paint what I call the shell of the home, or they'll paint. They can paint either interior or exterior. People will usually do whichever is easier for them, but any exterior walls, and then either the attic or their ceilings, depending on the design of the house.
Mm-hmm. And are they, if they're using it on the finished surface,
mm-hmm.
are they mixing it with another paint for coloring, and how does that affect the insulated value?
Ours doesn't get mixed, but sometimes they will either put ours over another paint or paint over ours. It won't affect the insulating value of ours if it's painted over with another paint.
What do you mm-hmm. recommend, over or under another paint?
What I tell them is depending on their other, their colored wall paint, if they're using a high-end one that is, stain resistant, is the higher quality, then I would use that on the top of ours, just because, with those you're paying for the stain resistance and the extra, the extra quality as far as that goes, so they use ours under that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in some applications, people are looking for mold resistance. In that case, they want ours to be the last coating on top.
And how does it work in terms of mold resistance?
Mold resistance. Our coating won't. It's natural mold resistant. It doesn't have any. Most mold resistant coatings will have like some kind of biocides in them to specifically to inhibit mold growth. But ours, because the nanoparticle once the coating film is cured out, it's very resistant to moisture. Mold won't grow on the coating. So, therefore, we've had people where they've had an issue with mold, and they clean it off, and then they put our coating on, and the mold won't return.
So, like in a bathroom where you get a lot of moisture
mm-hmm.
in the shower, in the hot water, if
mm-hmm.
they apply this, then the mold basically goes away?
Right, exactly. It won't. But, our coating won't allow it to grow on it. So, but yeah, by coating the wall, it doesn't have a place to live anymore.
What is just visually, you
mm-hmm.
know, when you take a shower, the moisture collects on the surface of the wall with the Nansolate paint. What's happening to that moisture?
Now, ours, the coating will make the particle makes the film very hydrophobic, meaning it doesn't like water at all. So instead of like seeping in or infiltrating the surface, it will just stay right on the surface of the coating. It won't have anywhere to go. So then it will just either dissipate, you know, naturally as it dries or is wiped off.
And the reason that mold grows on paints is because they maybe collect some of that moisture inside of the paint.
Mm-hmm.
Which gives it the mold a longer period to grow.
Right, yeah, that's exactly right. It kind of gives it an environment where the moisture is staying right in inside the paint. It's allowing the mold to collect. Mm-hmm.
What about a situation such as Katrina where you've got homes that have been damaged from flooding and you've got a major mold problem? Usually you have to tear the home down. Is this something that could be used in those applications where, you know, you still got the internal, the boards and whatnot that have gotten wet and you've got mold inside there?
Right. Well, once the mold was removed, because there are issues with mold where it's actually growing inside the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So in those cases, it does have to be removed. But yeah, if in the remediation they actually sprayed the inside cavity or at least the wall area, and then, you know, they could also spray the exterior of the wall. Yeah, it would help keep mold from coming back or growing on that surface.
Is the mold something that you mention prominently on your website as being one of the indications where you want to use this product to prevent that?
Yeah, for our Home Protect line, it is. It's one of its characteristics. By far, people buy the coating for the insulating ability, but we do have those who mold for mold is a factor as well, so they're looking for the mold resistance.
Yeah, it seems like another secondary nice application.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Have you known of customers buying it exclusively for its mold properties, mold resistance?
Yeah, we have had a few who have bought it. They're having an issue, for instance, on a patio. So they're not particularly looking, you know, if it's an outside area, they're not particularly looking for the energy savings, but they're having an issue with having to remove mold over and over again, you know, that keeps growing back. So, yeah, they like, especially down here, I live in Southwest Florida where our corporate headquarters are, so it's very humid here.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to jump over on topics for a little bit and talk
mm-hmm.
about this, the R&D end for taking the paint and actually being able to hook up electrodes to it
mm-hmm.
and generate electricity from that differential inside-outside heat. I'm curious logistically how you would do that, how you would get, you would pull off that gradient.
Right. Now, I think for that system, and I can just speak in general terms since it's still in research, there would have to be an area right where it would be a little bit more than the coating. It'd have to be a film or a little bit thicker area so that you could capture the differential. You'd have to be able to have the electrodes, as you say, to capture that differential.
And would these be large surface areas, or would they be in small, like panels, so to speak, maybe 6 inches by 6 inches, 3 inches by 3 inches? Logistically, are you pulling wires every few inches, or have they produced some prototypes, early prototypes, to show this effect?
I haven't seen any of the prototypes they still have in the lab. They haven't released yet for us to see, but I believe logistically it would make sense to do in a panel system, just because it's more versatile if you're, say, putting it over a wall area. It's easier to make it a, you know, retrofit for wherever you're putting it if it's in panels.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'd like to get back to that subject, but mm-hmm. I just thought of something that I'd like to bring up as a question. The paint is actually clear.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine some people might even spray it on glass, like in a bathroom window, for example, where you don't you don't want to be able to see clearly through the glass, but you're letting light through.
Right.
Do you find that some of your customers are actually spraying it on glass?
Yeah, we have seen that use, absolutely. We've had some that have written back, and they have used it on skylights. And then we recently had a company, Cornwell Quality Tools, send in some information on application. They used it specifically on their windows. They didn't care about, you know, the clarity. They just wanted to let some diffused light in, which, you know, it does allow that. And they were able to insulate, because, of course, everyone knows windows is a large place that heat transfers through in a home or building.
Now, I'm just along the lines of brainstorming, I haven't thought this one through. It may be a ridiculous question, but I'm curious if there's a solar industry application here where you've got solar panels. Would you want mm-hmm. to use this on the surface of those for one reason or another?
Now, that is very interesting. We have somebody in California actually working on, well, they're working with panels, but they're using it on the coating on solar hot water heaters. I think if you could find an area of the panel, because, of course, the top of the panel, you want the sun to come through. But perhaps if there's an area on the back of the panel where, you know, anywhere you don't want heat to transfer, or you want to inhibit the transfer of heat, is our coating would be very useful.
Mm-hmm. So obviously the holding tank and the ducting for that, but I was actually mm-hmm. thinking about the surface where the solar is being collected.
I see. Yeah, I think they still want to let the solar through, but or perhaps if there was a way once it was collected to, you know, anywhere they didn't want it to flow back out, the coating could be used.
Mm-hmm. It would let the sunlight in, kind of like the greenhouse effect type of thing.
Right, exactly. Maybe. And they have, because that's interesting, you mentioned that our coating is used on greenhouses as well, and when I first started getting the question from people, it was an interesting application to think about, because they do want heat to come in to heat the plants, but yet they also don't want all the heat to go back out. So it was trying to come up with a way to make that work where our coating wouldn't interfere with the normal heat coming in. So the University of Athens actually tried it on the Agricultural University tried it on their greenhouse. And what they ended up doing was putting on the north side of the roof, leaving the south side of the roof uncoated, and then they used it on the walls as well. And that worked. They saw that worked very well for them.
Mm-hmm. So the inhibition of the, if I understand right, the energy, the type of energy that comes in through the glass from the sun
mm-hmm.
is different than the type of energy you want to keep inside. One is infrared, and the other is like photons and whatnot. I'm wondering if, because the photons could pass through it, but then the infrared that gets as the photons strike the surfaces inside the greenhouse and heat
mm-hmm.
up the greenhouse, that infrared would maybe be prevented from going back out.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Our that's what they're using basically for our coating to keep that energy in.
Do you know of anyone who's tried spraying your coating on a on the glass itself in a greenhouse and what kind of results they've gotten?
We have had people that use it now on the glass. They won't use it over the full roof. They'll use it over part of the roof of the greenhouse and then the walls. And it basically does. It allows them to keep more of the heat in that's collected.
Mm-hmm. Let's get back to the question about the thermoelectric applications.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know of any prototypes that have been developed, that there's something that they want to, they're tasked with coming up with this
mm-hmm.
concept, but they haven't actually produced any proof of concept prototypes yet?
I mean, within the lab, and they haven't released them even to the rest of us here at the corporate level or publicly yet, simply because when intellectual property is involved, they're very careful about their timing with that. But within the R&D itself, they have their working prototypes.
Yeah, because I know, we have this listing of thermoelectric technologies, and I know there's a lot of great applications for harnessing waste
mm-hmm.
energy and other heat surfaces that are otherwise just venting off into the environment. Why not capture some of that energy? Everything from engines to geothermal plants to even solar applications.
Exactly. Yeah, there's so many out there. You're right, where heat is just really wasted. I mean, if it could be collected and used in a better way.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, once they get this technology going, it'll be able to be adapted to other uses like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious, I posted your press release that you released back October 1st, 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it that was being announced at that time? Why did you go public with that much information?
Okay, let me look. I'm just looking back at that release.
October 1st was the date I had. It was released actually August 22nd.
Oh, I see. Is when we announced the addition to our intellectual property portfolio. That was about the electricity generating technology. I would say that was when they were getting the patent written, basically announcing that this was going to be an addition to our intellectual property. So that's probably why they went ahead and announced this, because the patent was being filed.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
So there was something significant enough in their development and the research and development that they
mm-hmm.
were, going through the process of getting a patent, and they filed, so you made an announcement of that.
Right, exactly.
Uh-huh. I guess other than that, it's tight-lipped.
Yeah, and I hate it when I don't always know the answer, because I answer all our technical questions and I usually know everything. But yeah, when it comes to R&D, there's some things I can't say anything about yet.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the marketing of your product, another question I was having
mm-hmm.
earlier, when you're talking about the growth of your company, have you ever had problems fulfilling orders, that you've had so many orders coming and you've not been able to keep up?
We haven't had that to date. We have worked to ramp up, because that's one thing that we've always been, even in the very beginning when we're just, the product first came out and we're just getting a few orders here and there, we always kept in mind that, what would happen if this doubled, then what would happen if it doubled again. We always kept in mind ramping up to meet our manufacturing demand. So right now we're actually looking at a second manufacturing in Europe. Setting up another plant there, because we have so much of our sales that come from Europe now.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't. So luckily, we've been proactive there. We haven't had a problem meeting demand yet.
So the corollary or related question is, in your marketing, you know, you're involved in marketing. How aggressively are you going after some of the potential applications in the markets that are out there?
Now, we run several different marketing campaigns simultaneously, and that's one of the great things about the product. Always, also one of the challenges is that it fits in so many different markets. So we are pretty aggressive about always having campaigns running, whether it's to homeowners, to painting contractors, you know, on the building side or green buildings, to, you know, industrial, you know, or we do marketing to the textiles or the pipelines, the pipe industries. So we've always got marketing running to one market or another. For instance, right now we're mailing out to dairies, and food processing industries.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many different, so many different applications for the product, you know, but all of them mainly boil down to energy savings, you know, whether you're running a dairy or you're in a mine or, you know, you're running a pipeline or, you know, you have a home. Everybody's looking to reduce the use of energy, and insulating, you know, is one of the easiest ways to do that.
I don't recall seeing any advertisements from you in any mm-hmm. Google AdSense. Have you used that venue at all?
Oh yeah, we've used Google pay-per-click and actually MSN Ask. Now maybe I need to find out what keywords you're looking at. Maybe we need to upgrade our Google Ads. But actually, not to be an advertisement or anything, we get quite a lot of our website traffic we have since the beginning from that pay-per-click advertising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really a good way of advertising, because you people who are interested in a given topic, your ad shows up on that page, and you know it's kind of a matching target with audience.
Right, exactly. And then
the target audience.
Yeah, definitely. It has become one of the most cost-effective venues for advertising. You know, in this internet age, I guess we're in, and one of the new. The newest venues that we've been looking into, you know, with all the social networking sites is putting up our demonstration videos, or creating more demonstration videos for the product, and then getting them out there on platforms like YouTube. You know, of course, having them available on our website, but also, you know, begin to get them out there as many venues as we can, just to help increase awareness.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we've got a page of PESN about you, but we need to get one over at PezWiki so we can keep the page updated on your progress.
Oh, great.
One of my to-do lists. You are listed in our top 100 energy technologies, by the way.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. We'll definitely have to do a link back. That's one of the things we want to get on our product site is link backs to other companies, you know, links to companies of interest that are, you know, kind of partner companies, or, you know, our customers would enjoy going to their sites. So yours will definitely be one I include.
Yeah, probably the best URL for that would be top100energy.com.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the number 100 is the number not spelled out.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the other applications that people are using this product for that we've not addressed yet.
Okay, let me think what other markets.
You've mentioned textiles. Could you elaborate on that and what?
Yeah, that's
for?
Been one of the biggest markets internationally, and unfortunately, here in the U.S., we don't have much textile industry left. A lot of it is overseas. So in Turkey has been one of our largest markets for textile. They are using it on they have so much equipment, dyeing machines, heat exchangers. Basically, when they're dyeing fabric and making fabrics, they're using a lot of heat. They use cycling processes with, you know, hot water and steam. So they have all these different types of equipment. So by using Namplate on the equipment, of course, they're able to reduce the amount of energy it uses to, say, heat to a certain temperature. And then one interesting thing they've also found on the dyeing machine process in particular, when they're dyeing fabric a certain color, the temperature they keep the machine at is very important to make sure the color is fluid throughout. They call it dye lock consistency.
Mm-hmm.
and because of the insulation on the outside of the machine, it's able to keep a more regular temperature. So it actually, they found it improved their consistency across the board of their dye lots. And then, of course, on the grand scale, we have they use so much energy that just by saving the one plant in particular, after using the coating, was saving about 15% of the energy that they had used for liquid natural gas, and that 15% equated to about $40,000 a month U.S. that they were saving just from coating their equipment.
Another question in terms of the application of this. Is it sprayed on, rolled on, when do you get stop getting a return on? If you get, one layer is good, two layers is better, or is one layer totally adequate and you don't need to go any thicker than such and such? Let's talk about thickness and application.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Three layers is our recommended coverage, or three coats. Just because we found that consistently is not too many that it becomes inefficient for cost or labor, and that it still returns a very nice reduction in energy spent to heat or cool. Now, certain applications in industrial, some of them in the textile, they will use more coats because they specifically want to reduce to a certain temperature. For instance, for safety reasons, if they have a 250-degree pipe and they need to bring it to personnel safety limits of about 140, they'll use as many coats as needed, to reduce that temperature. Generally, 24 is as many as anyone would ever want to use, I would think, for any application, just because it is a water-based coating and it would just take forever to dry and cure if you went much past that.
Yeah. And when they're doing three layers, you talk about a 30-day cure time. Is that with the three layers, or do you have to wait 30 days between each layer?
No, that's with the three. You can wait just about an hour between each coat. To dry, and then you get a good hard dry in about 48 hours when it's, good dry to touch.
By the time you get up to 24 layers, you're in a situation similar to the, the dam over, Hoover Dam. It's going to take like 500 years to cure. It's so thick.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's right. When you get so many, it's just, you're increasing the cure time quite a bit. We do have a new upcoming epoxy product that the cure time is going to be much less on that one, and it'll be able to go on thicker. That's one that a lot of people are excited about.
Okay, and another question I had regarding your company, I noticed that you've got a couple of websites. You have industrial-nanotech.com and you have nansolate.com.
That's right. The first one's our corporate site, and actually that was our very first website. We only had one. And then, of course, we wanted to create a more user-friendly site, basically just product-oriented, so consumers can go and find out everything they wanted to do about the coating. And then, if they want to learn about the company and read all our press releases, they can click over to the corporate site. So Nansolate's our product consumer site.
And what about the... investments. Are you a public company? If somebody wants to invest in your company, how would they go about doing
that? Oh, that's right. Yeah, we are a public company. Our ticker is INTK, and we are in the Pink Sheets Exchange. So anybody that wants to look up our financial information or our, any of that stock information can go to pinksheets.com and then put in our ticker symbol, and our information will come up for them.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then finally, are there any issues or questions or items that we've not covered that you'd like to address about the product and the company?
Oh, let's see. I guess I would just say... I know we haven't addressed the green factor. Basically, one thing that Nansolate is in, it helps save energy, so it's green in that way. But it's also low VOC, environmentally safe coating, which a lot of people like as well, especially when they're using it in their homes. And that's one of the focuses also of industrial nanotech, is working in nanotechnology in a way that not only benefits people, you know, helps people be more energy efficient, but also creates technology that people can feel good about, they can feel safe about.
In the case of a fire, and this stuff is going up in smoke along with everything else that's burning,
mm-hmm.
what is going into the atmosphere in terms of the burning of this product?
Now, ours, it doesn't have any toxic ingredients. Our VOCs are considered low. They're at 100 grams per liter. So the environmental impact of ours is very negligible. And actually, our GP product has certification for use in food processing facilities.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Francesca, I appreciate you coming on our show. We've come to the end of our segment. We've been talking to Francesca Crowley over there at Industrial Nanotech and talking about the Nansolate product that they have. It has thermal capacity to insulate very well, and it's a cost-effective product that I imagine is far from market penetration, but is well on its way to making it there.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed talking with you.
All right. Good luck in your endeavors.
Great. Thank you.
You've been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.